Welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. I'm your host, Nathaniel R. Today I have Nick Davis and Joe Reed in the house. So here we go. Do you guys want to do a little, like, extra 1995?
I was sure.
Sure, yeah.
I've never stopped wondering what you were both going to say.
It was actually your idea, I think, Nick.
Yeah, like a movie that we don't talk about and that our feelings about might not be clear. That we are a fan of from 95.
Let me start just because I know what it might
miss
right now.
Definitely.
Adam Egoyan's Exotica.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Because I remember at the time, it made my top 10 list at the time, and of everything on my top 10 list, I literally remember nothing about it. Except for that there was a stripper.
There it is. That's right.
And that I think that was Mia Kirshner?
Of course it was.
Right, okay. Because it's Adam Egoyan, right.
Yeah.
And because it's Mia Kirshner.
Right. Yeah.
Also correct.
And I remember at the time really being into Mia Kirshner because she also had this other Canadian movie called, like, Love and Human Remains or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, oh, she's such a cool actress. And then, like, immediately after that, she made that L Word series.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And I thought she was terrible in that and basically doing the same performances again. And so I was like, wait, I'm confused about this person. And then she was in Black Dahlia, and I thought she was really good in that. And so I was like, she keeps playing the same character, and I either hate her or love her. And how is that possible?
Sounds like you're working through some ambivalence in your sexuality.
But anyway, so I remember nothing about Exotica, except for that the general mood was really fascinating to me. I never hear anyone talk about it, even.
Yeah, Adam Egoyan is one of those people who in the middle of the 90s felt like this is someone who's going to become a staple of the art house. And he still puts a movie out every 2 years, but you're never quite sure if it really opened or not. And,
right.
Like, I think I've seen all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same way that the con people have seen all of them, like, you're always hoping, maybe this time. Well,
yeah.
Well, you know.
I'll stick up for Chloe as a trashy masterpiece. Maybe masterpiece is strong, but trashy certainly isn't.
Well, I mean, his follow up to Exotica was The Sweet Hereafter, which was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal.
And that one I remember really well, but Exotica I just have no memory of.
I had the same relationship to them, and so I watched, in terms of being really impressed by both of them, but remembering Sweet Hereafter kind of word for word, and Exotica was more fleeting in a way. And I rewatched it maybe a couple years ago, and it's really great. Like, if people are listening who haven't watched it,
mm-hmm. I remember being a young teenager and seeing Exotica on the cable guide or whatever, and recording it thinking it was going to be something else, that I was maybe going to be watching something with, like, Skinamax potential or whatever, being sadly disappointed by what I found. So maybe I should watch it as an actual person and not a weird, horny for butts teenager.
Turned 2, which is the best Cinemax movie. I'm not even going to brook disagreements about that.
What, Scorned 2?
Scorned 2, I used to show to all my friends in college. It was so great. There's a scene where the woman who's been scorned has to make sure that two other people die for their role in having scorned her. So she leans under the car, and there's this huge tube that runs from the tire to the middle of the car, and that represents the brakes. So she cuts it. It's great.
It sounds like another trash masterpiece.
It is a trash masterpiece. Her husband's a psychology professor, and you know that because he lectures at a podium that says psychology on it.
So anybody else? I said mine.
I was going to talk about Dolores Claiborne, which is sort of the movie I talk about a lot when I talk about 95, just because
It
feels like the one. I'm always sort of mystified that it didn't become more than it did in terms of even, like, just like a movie people talk about when they talk about, like, Kathy Bates' career, because I honestly think it might be in my top 2 or 3 Kathy Bates performances, but I always wonder how people who are not Stephen King people view that movie, because I was a huge Stephen King person, especially then when I saw that movie. And that movie adapted that book in such a cool way where it did a lot of reshaping of the way that narrative is structured. The book is structured very, very differently. It's a lot of it takes place in like letters, if I'm remembering it correctly. And just the,
like an epistolary novel?
I think so. I remember it being sort of like Carrie that way. But I don't know. I thought that atmosphere, it was one of those movies that looks exactly as cold as you think as it's supposed to be on screen, sort of like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo in that way. And I thought Bates and Jennifer Jason Leigh were so good opposite each other. And of course, that's the same year that Jennifer Jason Leigh did Georgia. So like, it makes sense to me that like nobody was talking about that, about Dolores Claiborne, when they had Georgia to talk about. But I always, whenever anybody brings up that like fantastic best actress field of 95, I always make sure to like throw in Kathy Bates and Dolores Claiborne, because I just thought she was good in this really sort of like difficult world.
Yeah, I think, wasn't the scuttlebutt that everybody who made that movie was pretty upset that the distributor put it out in March, because it's such a kind of fall winter movie anyway, but also that they had thought of it as a prestige season release and there was no way anybody was going to remember it.
Yeah.
The commenters on the SmackDown post have consistently said that Judy Parfitt is the conspicuous absence in the supporting actress lineup that year.
Oh, yeah, she's like, so
you're getting
good.
A lot of Dolores Claiborne love.
I did not see when... There's actually a post on that performance coming up on the blog by one of the contributors, and I don't remember this movie at all either, other than I didn't like it. but I only saw it in theaters on like opening weekend and never have seen it again. But you would recommend this movie to me.
I would highly recommend it. Yeah.
I've got it on my shelf here to, I just finished watching the five that we have to watch, and I was going to watch The Crossing Guard and Dolores Claiborne after as whatever happened to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Tony Gilroy did the adaptation.
Yeah.
Was the writer on that, which is pretty cool.
I think that might be where I just taught Michael Clayton in the spring, and I think that might be where I read about
the
testiness about when they released it.
Ah, that's interesting.
Because boy, does that guy not worry about saying too much.
So Nick, what's your pick?
I was going to talk about The Addiction, the Lily Taylor vampire movie, which is weirdly out of print here. There's no DVD. To get a copy of it, I had to order one from Italy. Which,
wow.
Okay. But it's able... I know you've seen it, Nathaniel, right?
I have not seen it, actually.
Oh, you haven't? I thought you had made allusions to it before. Okay.
And I've never heard of it.
I remember at the time that Lily Taylor got a lot of, like, critical raves for it, but that's all
she
I
did.
Remember.
And a Spirit nomination... I mean, as amazing as the Oscar field for Best Actress was that year, the Spirit field, which only overlapped with Elizabeth Shue, was equally amazing. And she's great. She's this graduate student in New York City who's trying to push herself through her philosophy dissertation with her best friend Edie Falco. And in the first 5 minutes of the film, she's walking home and gets attacked by Annabella Sciorra, who's a vampire. And... for the rest of the movie, it's not played as satire really, but if you're, I saw it like the first month I was in graduate school, and if you happen to be in that position, it's amazing, because the movie is sort of like, I this is a really bad time for me to become a vampire. I'm trying to finish my dissertation, and she's like trying to like resist her bloodlust while typing out her thoughts about Heidegger and trying to get her shit into her committee and stuff. But it's
funny.
This incredibly moody, scary, sinister, black and white version of New York. Obviously, you can already tell from everything I've said that Christopher Walken shows up. He does. And then her dissertation defense, like her vampirism is making her like intellectually precocious as well as like her body rebelling in all these crazy ways. There's like a 5 minute scene where the camera doesn't cut, where she's just, well, I won't spoil what happens in it. Lily Taylor goes to some places.
Okay.
And then it ends with a giant bloodbath where she attacks her all of her advisors at her dissertation defense. So for all the academics who read the film,
I was going to say that's got to really speak to you.
Yeah. This is the very definition of niche, I believe.
Totally niche. Totally niche. And yet, like, that was such a moment of like Lily Taylor being the indie queen. So something that's marginal.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking before about Adam McGoyan, like Abel Ferrara is even more like, do your movies like open or
right.
Is it just something the cool guy at the video store who won't look me in the eye watches?
There's always one on the docket at New York Film Festival. I will tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I was having trouble deciding between this and Persuasion, which that's a double feature that really ought to happen sometimes. Dane Austen and Vampire Bloodbath.
I believe we have that coming up with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Perfect.
Somebody had that double feature.
Hopefully it won't be 4 hours long. Right. I have some more questions about 1995.
Mm-hmm.
What was, at the time, what was your number one of the year?
Nixon.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, but Nick will lose all respect for me.
Okay.
It was The Usual Suspects.
Okay.
Which I was a giant fan of, and I still actually...
I mean, a lot of people were.
Yeah.
My number one at the time was Dead Man Walking.
I love Dead Man Walking.
But now it would be probably something different. But it would still be in my top 10.
Yeah.
Now it's Showgirls, we know.
And now Safe... I mean, Safe was in my top 10, but that would probably be my number one now.
Yeah, it would definitely be my number one now, but at the time it was... That was my first list I ever published, and it was Nixon, Bridges of Madison County, Dead Man Walking, Babe were the top four, for sure.
I find the younger crowd, their reaction to people loving Babe is so funny to me.
Why?
Because, like, whenever I have, like, casually mentioned it on the site, people act like, that is such a weird Best Picture nominee. How did that get nominated? And like, people loved it, and it was great. People That's how it got nominated.
And still love it, but I think, I mean, it's kind of...
It is atypical,
an actual child, it would feel a little bit like, oh, they nominated Winnie the Pooh and The Blustery Day. So, like, it just feels like a kid's movie, maybe. Or it's hard to recapture, I bet, how much that movie landed with adults.
Yeah.
And, like, won the Golden Globe.
Yeah, yeah. Over, what was nominated against it?
Toy Story and The American President, which the Globes loved.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like, even Rob Reiner Best Director nomination.
No, I remember Babe winning, because I remember it was, like, one of the most shocking things I had seen at the Globes.
And because you remember Holly Hunter got to announce it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you that you remember that.
So we have Usual Suspects, Nixon, and Dead Man Walking. And now what would yours be, Joe? You didn't say.
I feel like mine right now would probably be Seven.
Okay.
I feel like that's the one that sort of stuck with me.
It's such a good movie.
Nixon would probably still be up there with me, just because I feel like it's such a huge, big swing of a movie.
Confession, I have never seen Nixon.
Interesting.
So this is, like, a major gap in my viewing because of Joan Allen.
If you're going to be done by Thursday, you better start now.
That's true. The SmackDown is next weekend. Yeah, I got some viewing to do because it is, what, 3 hours long?
Well, depending on which version you... If you get it online, I think you will get the three-hour version, but the only one you can get on DVD now is the three-and-a-half-hour director's cut, which I watched yesterday. Mm. But that was, like, my fifth time seeing the movie.
No, I rented it from iTunes, so whatever version they have is the one I'm watching.
Nick, as you were talking about Lily Taylor, I decided what we really should have done was done a whole podcast on the Best Actress race that year.
Oh, yeah.
Because it really was phenomenal. Like, it ran, like, 12 deep, and...
Yeah, and even if they had, like, people think of it as, like, the best lineup, but even if it had been different, people would have loved that lineup.
Well, that's the thing. It's just, like, for as strong as the lineup as it was, and I think there's really no weak spot in the lineup that we actually got at the Oscars.
No.
Depending on how you feel about Sharon Stone and Casino, but I think she's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, she would be my weakest link, but still, it's completely obvious why she was nominated.
But even of the ones that, like, you know, could have been nominated or the ones that had no chance but we feel like should have been considered, like, it just runs the gamut from like Julianne Moore in Safe to Alicia Silverstone in Clueless, you know what I mean? And everything in between. It's pretty cool.
Those characters don't live that far away from each other geographically, and it'd be fun to watch them cross over. Like, there's a Marvelverse I can get behind. Like, Safe and Clueless all leading to some outdoor mall scene where Cher and Carol are in line together.
Right, totally.
Buying a couch with a coming out part.
I think that Carol would be allergic to Cher's outfits. I think those colors would, her eyes would start fogging up or something.
And I think Cher wouldn't even see Carol if she were standing in front of her.
No.
And also, was Muriel's Wedding that year or a different year?
It was released that year in the U.S., yes.
In the U.S., okay. Because that's, I can never quite...
Yeah, so a lot of people were pulling for Toni Collette that year.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I feel like that was a thing that like nudged in one direction a little bit, might have happened if it was maybe a little bit bigger deal in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Like mainstream-wise.
Well, I mean, she did get a lot of press for it.
She got a lot of press for it, yeah.
Which I was inventing conflicts in my head, which obviously I still do, and being upset that Minnie Driver and Circle of Friends was not being enough recognized as equally great
as
Wallflower Cinema, you know?
I don't yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Well, I never saw Circle of Friends.
Neither did I, actually, and I do love Minnie Driver.
Yeah, because that was her debut.
Yeah, yeah, that was her big breakthrough.
I haven't seen it since the time, and I remember that because of that, A Muriel's Wedding and While You Were Sleeping, like those three kind of got lumped together in a way as like these new sort of romantic comedy heroines who weren't like, you know, bringing full Julia Roberts or whatever.
Right.
And I haven't seen Circle of Friends since then, but I remember really liking it and her.
I will tell you what, speaking of who we would have nominated back then when we were that age, I would have you would have absolutely seen Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds on my Best Actress ballot if I would have had a vote when I was 15. Absolutely. I watched that movie a billion
times. Well, she did get the MTV nomination.
See? Exactly. That's probably the list I would have been going off of. So.
Yeah. But back then, the MTV nominations, they did actually nominate the middle-aged actresses for things sometimes.
Every once in a while, yeah, they totally would. It's totally true.
Especially if they had just been in Coolio videos.
Right. Yeah.
But like Julie Delpian before Sunrise was that year. And...
Oh, I thought that was 94.
No, that's 95.
Oh,
yep,
wow.
95. Yep.
Wow, yeah, it's a really good year.
I was also a big fan of
which is it only goes to show you that the best cinematic years always get the worst Oscars, because Braveheart won.
Oh yeah, totally, absolutely, with nary a Best Actress contender in sight.
So wait, what were you gonna say that I interrupted you?
Oh, I was gonna say I was also totally into that movie Copycat.
Oh yeah, with Sigourney and Holly
Hunter, which was like a very early indicator of where my, you know, tastes would go movie-wise in terms of actresses. Just like, no, I want to see that movie where Sigourney Weaver isn't agoraphobic and Holly Hunter's trying to catch a killer. As all my friends are going to see Ace Ventura Part 2.
Yeah.
I had the Copycat poster up in my dorm room like all 4 years, and I remember seeing that movie and being like, it was one of the first times I thought about framing, because I was like, this lady is 6'2" and this lady is 4'8" and they're having to be in the same frame all the time. How is this working? Like, I kept watching for that.
Isn't there this really awkward shot toward the end where they're sort of walking together into the sunset or something, and they're like different, completely like a
like
giant
and
a
or something? Yeah.
Yeah. There is a really awkward shot in the movie of them standing together. At some point. But yeah, it was totally like, how did they do that?
And Harry Connick Jr. has those teeth.
Oh, yes. God.
There was another performance I was really into, and this will surprise Nick. I was really into Jessica Lange and Rob Roy that year.
Oh, wow.
One of the only times I've ever been into her.
I was super into Rob Roy in general, and I saw it with my dad, and it was such a... That was kind of the first time we went to see a movie just by ourselves, I think. And then it became kind of a regular habit with us. Mm-hmm. For a couple years after that, but I just rewatched it for the first time a couple weeks ago, and it was not everything I had remembered.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, I think she wasn't as great as I'd remembered, but I was pretty in the tank for that film.
That was another movie I watched because I thought Liam Neeson might show his butt.
He showed more than that.
You could tell where my mind was at age 15.
Wait, he did show more than that?
He did.
I don't remember this. How do I not remember this?
All right, Rob Roy viewing party next year.
Of digital media has gifted you with things that might have... Go to the instant replay.
Oh, and also Sharon Stone in The Quick and the Dead. No, I'm just kidding. That was not among my list. Oh,
no, but like Holly Hunter in Home for the Holidays, Parker Posey.
Yeah, there were tons of leading actress movies that year.
It was amazing.
Yeah, like, I was super into Parker Posey and Party Girl that year.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Sandra Bullock in The Net. No, I'm kidding.
No. Carrington.
Carrington, yep.
Yeah, and I was actually super, super pissed that Parker Posey did not get a Golden Globe comedy nomination.
Well, it wasn't A Month by the Lake. I mean, calm down. Party girl.
How close do we think Kidman came to getting a nomination for To Die For?
I think she was six, but I think it was one of those lineups that was... Oh, no, I think Jennifer Jason Leigh was sixth. But
really? I think Kidman might have been. I think Jennifer Jason Leigh might have been too insectile for them or something.
I think those two were the only two that were probably even remotely close. Because as good as the year was, I think it was always going to be those five.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to imagine which one would have dropped.
Well, I know, like, based on, like, precursors at the time, because that year was so exciting to sit through, it was one of those, what's going to happen? I remember being super, super worried that Elizabeth Shue was not going to get nominated, because she didn't have any of the sort of serious actress vibe that the others did. Yeah. Like, everybody loved her in it, but... Yeah. What?
I always saw her as running, like, maybe not a close second, but like a decided second place in that race.
No, I thought she was like fifth, honestly. I thought it was between her and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Huh.
For the nomination.
But like every one of those five actresses had a great sort of hook to their award season, where even down to like you know, obviously Emma Thompson had the thing with the Sense and Sensibility screenplay, so like that was a great hook, and it was a bit of a dramatic comeback for Streep.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, in a way, I mean, she was the one who seemed slightly the most on the bubble in terms of getting a nomination.
That's how I would have thought, too, yeah.
Well, like, no, I don't know, because I remember in the summer when it came out in the summer,
and
people were like, oh, she's going to win. She's finally going to win her third. Because people were so excited about that performance.
But then when the fall was so stacked, like, that was often when, you know, some good summer stuff was getting pushed back. But and because that movie didn't get nominated for anything else, and I think it's a good enough movie that it did actually. I mean, it got a Globe nomination for picture and stuff. Like there were signs at whatever. Anyway,
Well, and I remember there was some people thought that Annette Bening had a shot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
For American President, because people really liked that, but it turned out to be just like Globe movie, basically.
Which is too bad, because I really enjoy that movie. And I like her performance in that a lot.
I mean, people really liked that movie at the time, I remember, but I never really... Like, I enjoyed it, but it was kind of disposable to me. Like, I never have thought about it really since.
It's a good TV movie. It's a good one where, like, if it comes on television and I catch it halfway through, I'll generally stick with it till the end. And it's such a proto Aaron Sorkin, like, West Wing movie, too, that, like... I'm such a massive geek for that show that that also contributes.
Can I say something? Oh, and you know what I just else remembered who else was that year was freaking Angela Bassett in Waiting to Exhale. She was so good.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
I totally forgot about that. I'm just looking over like the list of releases that year. It was an amazing year. And this might be embarrassing. I don't know for sure, but I was... let me make sure it's the right year. Oh, no, it's not the right year. Never mind. What, I was going to say Meg Ryan, but it wasn't the right year.
For When a Man Loves a Woman?
Yeah, because that was the year before.
Yeah, that was the year before.
But I was always of the opinion that Meg Ryan was a much better actor than she got credit for being.
Oh, I think that's true, especially in that era.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are always those actresses who it's bizarre and mystifying that they never got Oscar nominations, and she's mm-hmm. always at the top of that list.
Well, 94, like, 95 is, like, a freaking great year, but 94 has got to be one of the weirdest Best Actress years ever.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, like, everything, nothing about that season made any sense.
Yeah, that's totally true. Well, that's also that thing where if Jodie Foster hadn't already won two,
yeah,
would she have been an even bigger contender for Nell to win? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that Susan Sarandon gets the Populist nomination for The Client when, like, Streep was right there with The River Wild, which I think is an even better movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 94 was just, it was bizarre, because there were a lot of people who were super good that got no traction at all.
Yeah, totally.
Because they were in weird movies. That's always, like, the case, I suppose. How well Oscar does nearly always depends on are the actors doing the great work in the right kind of movie.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And I wonder if we are better or worse with that now, because weirder movies can be seen more widely. You know what I mean?
I'm not sure what you mean.
I just mean that, like, weird movies don't seem to have to wait a couple years to get discovered the way they did back then. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I almost feel the opposite. I mean, I structurally I can see that that might be true, but it also does feel like a smaller group of pre-anointed contenders takes up more of the space.
I definitely think you're right there. I'm just in terms of, like, it doesn't seem like it should be that way now. It seems like it should be different.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you're right. It feels like things tend to narrow a lot quicker, which I always tend to chalk up to the studios seem to have gotten
the hang of it.
A lot savvier at this game and just, like, don't throw good money after bad, which, you know, that's inapt phrase in terms of, you know, the movies, but, like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's maybe what they think of it. It's just, we're not going to chase long shots. We're going to
mm-hmm.
sort of put all our money into what we think is the sure shot.
Yeah.
But there also wasn't, like, a whole industry around it.
That's know? What I, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even mean just from the studios, though. I mean, us.
Yeah.
Not really us, but, or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm more reluctant to follow down that path, but I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you hear that a lot, but I sometimes wonder how much influence, like, I don't think any pundit has any influence, but I think, like, the fact of so much punditry existing, I do sometimes think that that has major influence, and then sometimes I don't.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't mean it in terms of pundits influencing directly how anybody votes, but I do think that it exerts an incredibly strong pull on what gets treated as
yes.
contender, even sometimes before it's gone in front of the camera, but certainly by the time, you know,
it's out, yeah.
Yeah.
Before it's had a chance to find
it. Or the season's opening up or whatever. Like, yeah, it's just that conversation exists all year in a way that just wasn't true
mm-hmm.
20 years ago.
But I still wonder if 20 years ago, as a movie's being made, like, internally within the studio, they've got things that are earmarked. I feel like that's sort of a thing now these days, that we're just more privy to these conversations. These conversations are happening
mm-hmm.
out in the open a lot more and by more different people.
Yeah, I mean, I do think within, I mean, I'm not going to say because I don't want to burn any bridges, but I do think within the studios, they definitely plan that way even before things are in front of the camera or when they're filming. Because I was at a meeting once at a studio and somebody was trying to push me on something that was currently filming. It wasn't even due to come out that year. And they were like, oh, she's going to win Best Actress. And I was just like, oh. And I'm like, but it just started filming.
They're like, so if you could start building this buzz now, that would be
yeah, cool. And I thought it was really weird, and then the movie never came out.
Wait, never?
No, it never came out.
Wow.
When were you at this Flora Plum meeting? And
Flora Plum. Oh my god.
I mean,
the jokes we have had about Flora Plum over the years.
God bless.
Kept that alive. It's clear that even, like, you read stories in the 80s about, like, that Fat Man and Little Boy movie, the Paul Newman one, where they were all betting on the set how many Oscars it would win. Like, I totally agree that the idea of studios doing internal math about where their awards contenders are has been with us for a long time, but the idea that people go to luncheons as prospective nominees, or that there's an event at the Four Seasons in November so that we can start building a case for a nomination that might happen in January. Like, it just seems like the nominees tell us all the time there was nothing like that, even 10 or 15 years ago, much less, earlier.
No, I remember talking in my interview with Marissa Tomei several years ago when I was asking her about that campaign season. She's like, well, I mean, she says what all winners do. Like, I barely remember it because it's like this, it's so intense. But she was also like, it was nothing like how it is now.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, what the amount of time and the amount of, campaigning and stuff.
Yeah.
So the 90s really changed things. And here we are talking about 95. Any other questions, since this is a whole nother podcast, I guess?
The movie that came out that year that I just could never figure out, and I haven't seen it since, but Get Shorty was sort of in the middle of the conversations about all these movies that I loved, and it just kept sticking out. It's like, but does anybody like that? Like,
well, that feels like a movie that was, like, hugely talked about then, and it was...
Yeah, I remember people liking it.
Well, it was such a... It was in the aftermath of the Pulp Fiction thing, where, like, Travolta's career had
been... Well, he won the Golden Globe for it. He
won the Golden Globe for it, exactly, but, nobody really talks about that movie in terms of anything, in terms of, like, oh, this is reminiscent of Get Shorty, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not a touchstone for things in the way that even lesser movies are. And again, I'm only remembering when I saw that movie 20 years ago, because I haven't seen it since at all.
Yeah, it's like they try to release that sequel to it, and it's like, you can't...
Oh, and that was so terrible.
You can't build a sequel on... It's like making a sequel to, like, Clock Watchers or something. Like, nobody remembers this.
Right.
But I remember Clock Watchers.
Well, obviously I do too, but, like, you know, that's not what I mean by anybody. But, like, I think it was Peter Travers' number one movie of the year.
Get Shorty?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it was on at least one of the Entertainment Weekly lists. Like, it was definitely thought of as... not just kind of a fun thing that was going to play for a few weeks and maybe be a good nomination for Travolta, but people treated it like it was in the conversation with, like, Leaving Las Vegas, and I just could never wrap my mind around it.
Yeah. And even now I'm looking at my list and I see I've got Hackman on my supporting actor list, so, like, clearly I really liked it, but nothing really sticks in my head. It's just not a sticky movie at all.
Yeah, I don't even really remember the concept of it. I did see it in the theaters, but, like,
yeah,
it was one of those sort of, like, gangster wants to make a movie.
Yeah.
Movies, okay. Which I feel like is an odd little subgenre unto itself.
Yeah, Bugsy.
Yeah.
And I remember Rene Russo telling everybody about how she got food poisoning at the lunch she took to talk about possibly getting cast, and that she felt like everybody felt so sorry for her that they gave her the part.
The audition. That's really interesting.
Yeah, like, the meeting she felt like hadn't gone that well, but then she, like, threw up on everybody, and she's like, I think they just felt sorry for me, honestly, but that's okay.
I self-deprecating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she was somebody in 1995 who seemed like she was going to have a huge career.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad she got that mini comeback with Nightcrawler.
Yeah,
and then she gets to massage Robert De Niro in his workspace, so that looks exciting.
Wait, in what?
In the Nancy Myers trailer.
Oh, the intern. Oh,
right.
Yeah. That seems grim. The other movie I was going to ask you about, because I don't know what any of you think, and it's some people's mainstay movie for 95, is Heat.
I have never seen that one.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
You're taking this long movie thing too far.
I came to Heat a lot later than most people did. I think I saw it maybe 5 or 6 years after the fact, which is probably good because I can't imagine I would have been in place as a teenager to appreciate it. I think that's one of those movies that I respect but don't have a lot of feeling for, which seems to be par for the course with me and Michael Mann, is when I like his movies, it's just like, yes, I see what you did there. Very good. And I'm never like, oh, I gotta see Heat. Like, I know that's... And again, it's one of those sort of boy movies in a way that, like, I know, like, a lot of people get annoyed when I talk about stuff that way, but, like, it does seem a very, like... It's a dude movie.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Crash I didn't go to it at the time.
In, you know... like, it's one of my favorite, honestly, Ashley Judd performances in terms of, like... her doing this really good work in a movie that is not for her at all. And it's also one of those movies in that like weird little subgenre of like Ashley Judd sweating a lot, which I feel like is like that and A Time to Kill and Bug.
All right, it's Nick. Nick, it's time to reorder your DVD shelf again.
It's true.
Ashley Judd sweating needs its
Ashley
own
Judd
section.
Sweating in a tank top is like its own...
I'm putting A Time to Kill and Cool Hand Luke together on the shelf right now. Sweat pops.
I actually thought, I didn't see Heat, but Ashley Judd, I thought, was completely mesmerizing in her one scene in Smoke that year.
Oh, right. That was that year, too.
And so at the time, because this is before she became, like, trash movie queen, like, with all the serial killers and Double Indemnity, Double Jeopardy and all that stuff. it's before that. So I thought she was gonna be this, you know, I mean she did become a major star, but I thought she was gonna be like a major actress, you know.
Her career's been very interesting, I will say, in terms of ebbs and flows.
Yeah. Well, now the politics, yeah, she's had a weird career.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But yeah, in my defense, in 1995 I was not writing about movies. And there was no reason for me to see Heat. It was a total boy movie about Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, who I was completely over by that point.
But there's quite a bit of actor sexuality in even the first to second tier. Like, Diane Benora's doing a whole thing.
Right, but I've only heard about that fact way after the fact because they did not advertise any of that.
That's true.
So all I knew was that it was a boy movie with guns, and it was Al Pacino and De Niro, and I was like, no thanks.
And you were like, what is this, Righteous Kill? I'm not seeing this.
And at the time, like, I'm a little bit like Joe with Michael Mann. Like, I respect his movies. Like, I tend to think that they were worth seeing if I go to them, but they're never on my, like, list of, like, oh, I have to see that.
Yeah.
But then when I end up seeing them, I usually think they're pretty good. Like, I even thought Black Hat was interesting, even though it's not good.
I agree. I didn't really like it, and yet I've now watched it twice, and then I bought it because I wanted to watch it again, and I don't like it.
I mean, my favorite Michael Mann movie is still Last of the Mohicans. But maybe that's because it's the most girly movie, because it's really romantic. I don't know.
Daniel Day-Lewis has that long, flowing hair. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a romance novel cover version of a boy movie.
What is my favorite Michael Mann movie? That's an interesting question to ask myself. Although I will say, in terms of movies that, you know, I saw well after the fact, I only saw Ali for the first time in the past year, and I really, really liked that.
I really liked that one at the time.
Way more than I expected to.
Yep.
I was confused why people didn't like that when it came out.
I'm honestly, now that I watch that, when I watched that, I think my first thought was just like, why didn't Will Smith win the Oscar for this? Like, it
was because,
like,
people didn't like the movie. That was the long and short of it.
Yeah. But yet,
when they don't like biopics.
That's true. There is a long standing bias against biopics.
Yeah, I mean. Oh, one thing I wanted to talk about while we're on this, like, retro kick is when people were, like, the SmackDown, which will be the major podcast next weekend, people were always complaining, like the readers, that they can't find Mighty Aphrodite.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, because... apparently you found the last laser disc of it.
I know. I'm like, this is not what I ordered. But I think there's this false sense that recent movies aren't hard to see.
Yeah.
And it really bugs me that that's the general consensus. Oh, like everything's available. It is simply not true. And Michael Mann always reminds me of this because I was going to do a big thing for Collateral's 10th anniversary.
Is that not available?
And I could not find it.
That's insane.
Really?
I mean, maybe you could buy it for a lot of money, but like no place that rented movies had it. And it wasn't streaming anywhere. That's like crazy. I mean, this was like last year when I looked for it, because that would have been the 10th anniversary.
That honestly suggests to me that like Criterion or somebody is about to work on it, because like
there are movies possibility.
Like that where like Mulholland Drive is not super easy to get right now, and and they let things go out of print in their original versions and then come back with some souped up. And he just put Thief out through them, and usually when you do one, you do another one.
Oh, okay. Because, I mean, honestly, I thought it was so weird. I'm like, that was a really famous movie. It got Oscar nominations.
That's really crazy, yeah.
And Mighty Aphrodite won an Oscar, and, like, you know, it's not available. So, I mean, if you're Nick and you buy DVDs all the time, it's available to you.
Hoarding. Just mishap-sham it up. You know, I'm going to die with these films. But,
you're just going to end up retiring and opening a video store out of your living room.
And I feel like Black Cat has been viewed 20 times.
That's right. And every time I'm like, I don't really like it.
But you have to admit that Chris Hemsworth's hair does some major tendril acting.
There is... The hair acting is the best kind of acting he's doing in that. Like, it's one of my concerns about the movie is that... I think I didn't get it until the second time I was watching it, that he's so unsatisfying in the middle of it. Yeah. I like almost everything on the edges of it better.
Yeah. I mean, all the other actors are more interesting in it.
Yeah.
Like, if that movie was about Viola Davis, which I think it easily could have been with a minor rewrite, it would have been a much better movie.
Again, she's so good. Say about every movie.
Like, I genuinely think that, not just because I love Viola Davis. Just, like, her drama of, like, how do I balance my government and these, like, I thought was so much more interesting. Like, he had no drama.
Yeah.
Like, what was his arc? He didn't want to go back to jail? Like, I don't get it.
And he wanted to have Chinese food without being shot.
Something all of us can relate to.
And maybe sleep with that lady.
Thanks again for chatting.
All right.
1995.
So can I ask you guys, are we off the record now?
Sure.
Are you going to...